You're listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of Fusion Patrol. This is episode 96 of Fusion Patrol, another one of our special countdown to 100 episodes. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we're going to be looking at something you never thought you'd hear us talk about on Fusion Patrol. Now, last time we did something new. We did Blake 7, which is, of course, not new, but it's new to us. And this time, in keeping with that something old, something new, we're going to be doing something old, something we've done before, something we promised we'd never do again, and we lied. It's the final episode of Man from Atlantis.
Oh, God, how the mighty have fallen.
The Deadly Carnival, episode 17. And there's a reason I wanted to come back and address this episode. Predominantly because it's the last episode. And there's some telling things in this episode for what might have happened if Man from Atlantis had continued on. So you watched this episode, did you, Ben?
Let me tell you something.
No, I didn't.
When we did Blake 7, I could not describe how happy I was at being able to watch, write a review, and discuss what I thought was the most amazing science fiction show ever to come out of England. And now to just turn around and to go back to The Man from Atlantis was one of the most depressing moments of my life. Now, let me say something.
And they're about the same age, too.
Yes, they are. Let me say something about this. Now, I make no bones that my most hated episode ever in any television is...
You're going to go on about the Montagues again, aren't you?
The Naked Montague. There are no words to describe how I utterly detest, loathe, hate, despise that particular episode. Now, granted, the episodes have generally gone down in quality, with the imp probably being as bottom as it gets. But when I came to Deadly Carnival, I could not get angry watching this episode. All I could do was feel pity and just watch this and say, oh, how sad.
It is not a remarkable episode.
It wasn't even worthy of my anger.
It's going to be an episode that I, you know, we'll probably zing through this one fairly quickly. But so I noticed something. So the Imp was episode 15. There are 17 episodes of Man from Atlantis. The Imp, you know, saw Mark and Elizabeth fighting the Imp, and I found that to be a far worse embarrassment than the Naked Montague. I'm so used to them ripping out Romeo and Juliet and sticking them in any other TV show that I'm not offended by that. And then the scientific and nonsense aspect of it was no worse than any of the other episodes. But the Imp was so bad because not only did it make no sense and that it was... But it was just out and out audience insultingly stupid. If I had been on the set of that story, I would have been embarrassed to have my name on the show.
Now, that's the word. With the Imp, I felt embarrassment.
It's
embarrassment to even watch it. With the Naked Montague, I felt rage.
Now, I have
pure
never...
anger and pure hatred. But when I saw the Imp, it was nothing more than just an embarrassment. And I couldn't help but just watch it through, you know, I cover my face with my hands and I poke, you know, take a peek through my fingers every so often just to see what was going on. But I felt embarrassed and ashamed to watch that episode.
So here's something that I have never been able to find out. And I did, when the show started, or when we started doing Man from Atlantis a while back, I tried to find this out, and I never could find out anything anywhere. Perhaps somebody, one of our listeners, has some information or can ferret something out better than I can on the internet, but I could never find out whatever happened to Belinda J. Montgomery.
I do.
Okay, wait. You mean with regards to why her...
Why she wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I do know.
Do you know? Okay, so let me, for the sake of the audience, though, let me just say that The Imp was 15. Deadly Carnival, the final episode, is 17. Episode 16 is The Siren. And if you go to episode 16, Belinda J. Montgomery has been removed from the credits. She is not in the opening credits.
Mm-hmm.
She is not in the episode. They have replaced her with someone named Jenny Reynolds,
right,
who is the new science officer. And there's a mention when talking to CW on the phone that Elizabeth's in Washington, something like that. And then in this episode, Jenny Reynolds is gone. The submarine is gone. The sub crew is gone.
But we do see the sub in the opening credits.
Right. Well, they didn't have to write the sub out. You know, that was... They don't even
use
it.
But they need something to fill those credit space.
Right. And I, you know, would feel, if I had been working on The Imp, contract or no contract, I'd have to leave.
Bailed.
I, you know, like, this is going to kill my career forever, working on this show. I don't know. That's just all my impression. Because it's awfully weird that she would be able to disappear like that. And, I mean, her character has not been well served throughout the series. It's gotten worse and worse.
No, it got worse since the pilot.
And by the time we got to that, it just, you know, shoot me. I'd rather not be in this show.
Right.
So what do you know about her
departure? What I know is that there was somebody actually mailed Belinda Montgomery and asked her, what happened? Why weren't you in the last two episodes of Man from Atlantis? Now, before I give the answer, let me say that I think this was a diplomatic response.
Okay.
And not entirely born out of honesty. The response that Belinda gave is that she became very sick and was not available to film the last two episodes. They honestly thought that they were going to come back for a second season, but they didn't know for certain. I guess at that time – renewals weren't really announced until the summer hiatus because the broadcast season was far different than what it is now. We didn't have these mid-season breaks like we do today in network television. So TV series would end about late April, early May. And also the broadcast season was actually much longer. I think it was 26 episodes instead of 22.
It could be. 70s, it might have been as little as 22 by then. But.
So at that time, season renewals were never announced until usually June is when networks would make the announcement, yes, you're coming back for another season. Now, at that time, they didn't know if they're going to be canceled or not. There was every hope that they would be renewed. I guess given the quality of network television at the time, they had no reason to fear that they were going to be canceled. So Belinda had – she said that she had become very sick and was unable to do any filming. So they replaced her for those two episodes. Now, that was her reply.
Why would they take her out of the clock?
That's my question. Even if she was out – just for a couple of episodes due to illness, why did they remove her from the opening credits?
Yeah, that doesn't
generally
make any sense.
That's not what is done.
Right.
So that's why I say the response that Belinda gave is a diplomatic one. Perhaps she was sick. Maybe it's what we call
I'd be sick
flu.
After doing that episode too.
Well, yeah.
I've got imp flu. Mm-hmm. I caught a disease from the imp.
It could be the same thing that made me sick last night. I think it may have been what we call a case of blue flu.
I was sick with my first baby.
Yeah, but basically, I personally think that the whole her being ill is a cover, and that she basically said, "I'm off the show," and they said, "Okay, well, you know, we'll write you off for a couple of episodes, and we'll discuss how things are during the season break." I don't know, something along those lines is what I'm guessing.
Could be.
But that's all that I know right now. She did respond to some person, and I read this on the internet about how apparently Belinda was very, very, very gracious in answering the question. And that's all that I was able to determine.
Hmm. Okay, so to carry this forward, the episode 16, The Siren, which we're not going to talk about, is a full-on standard Man from Atlantis episode. They've got the submarine, they've got their replacement for Elizabeth, and they do their Man from Atlantis-y stuff. The Deadly Carnival, however, is quite different.
It's a police caper.
Not only is it a police caper, but it basically takes place entirely on dry land with just a couple of exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Mark in a tank of water.
I can't wait till we get to that.
Mark, you know, diving under the water for a little bit. And
Mark having a fight in a pool.
Right. Well, the story starts off with a midget and a man with a prosthetic electric arm. Taking a stopwatch on a tour of some sort of a dam or water processing facility where somebody is supposed to be swimming through the pipes and he dies. And they're obviously talking about how he's got to be able to stay in there for a certain length of time, and they've got stopwatches and stuff. Clearly, they're up to no good. CW informs Mark that this man was an agent and that they're trying to infiltrate a gang of thieves operating out of a carnival, because that's always a good place for a gang of thieves to be operating.
Oh, of course. It's the perfect cover.
It is the perfect cover when you're a midget and a man with a
prosthetic arm.
Electric arm.
Oh,
and I don't mean electric arm like Steve Austin electric arm. I mean I mean like it's got two electrodes on the end that zap things.
It's the worst looking excuse for a prosthetic ever.
And so Mark goes to this carnival. Well, he doesn't go to the carnival. They stage a fake drowning, and Mark goes to the rescue, just innocent bystander, and he saves it. And the midget's apparently got his stopwatch at all times, and he's just watching people diving and timing them, and sees that Mark's like really good. And so he approaches him and gets him a job at the carnival as, get this, the man from Atlantis. Where they do a show where he's in a tank and he talks to people and there's no bubbles coming out of his mouth.
He talks to people. How does he talk to people?
Well, he's always been able to do that, so I...
Yeah, but we know how, well, no. He had some stupid little... under the skin communicator.
No. That little thing was sewn into his trunks, and that was just so that it could read the sound in the water around him. So now he's always been able to talk underwater. It's just that's the transmitter that gets it back to the sub.
Okay, fine.
So yeah, he's doing what he always does, but I mean,
but how do they hear it? How do the people in the sideshow hear it?
They're right there.
Oh, that's not... No, not good enough.
They're right there
next
to it.
Not good enough. That's not good enough.
Well, it's how it works. I mean,
that's
you saw
not how it works.
It's a carnival. They probably have microphones.
It's a piece of crap TV show.
And I like the fact that they call it a caper. We're trying to teach Mark new words in episode. We're back to that whole Mark needs to learn stuff, and that's a kind of interesting thing. Now, there's also the owner of the carnival, who is a woman of approximately television age. When I say television age, I mean she's about the age to mooch on Mark. And he gets his first kiss in
Mark
this episode.
Mark gets noogie.
Yeah. Yeah, she's hitting on him pretty... and he has to talk to CW about it at one point, and CW asks him like, you know, well, oh really, Mark? Well, what was it like? He says, his quote, "It felt funny."
I felt funny, CW,
but
nice.
Nice,
very nice. And, all I could do was think, oh my God, who's writing this adolescent drivel?
And then CW takes him off for a walk and puts his arm around his shoulder and has the talk with him.
It's a talk with the birds and the bees.
And the fish. How
and
did the fish fit in on this?
Oh, the fish. We have to discuss what I saw Mark eating earlier in the episode.
Okay. What was Mark eating earlier in the episode?
Fish food.
Was he eating fish food?
He was inside the Cetacean Institute. And he's looking at a tank, an aquarium.
Uh-huh.
And he's eating, And then when he turns around, he puts the lid on, you realize it's the food that they feed fish in their aquarium tanks.
I did not see
that. He was munching on it.
Hey, these guys have a sense of humor.
I just couldn't believe it.
So, not much happens this episode. They think he's gonna swim under some sewers, storm drains, and into a bank, and then break into the bank and let the midget and the guy with the electric arm in, and they're gonna steal a bunch of money. So, you know, they pose Mark as being like desperate for cash and heavy in debt with bookies and stuff like that, and so, you know, but really Mark's a plant, and he tells the cops. But then it's a double bluff. It's not really there. It's like some other place, and Mark has to, you know, thwart the robbery. And
especially since to ensure that they get Mark's cooperation, they go ahead and kidnap the gal who runs the carnival.
Uh-huh. Which is just a nice little plot complication, so Mark will go through with it. And that's really it. I mean, it really is a nothing episode, and that's I mentioned it earlier. There's just it's really nothing. But I think where it's interesting is this whole, you know, kind of wave away from the cetacean, which, you know, filming underwater is expensive.
Yeah,
we've mentioned that before, and by putting him on dry land, and he didn't seem to be having much trouble being on dry land all the time.
Not anymore.
Although he got to go into his tank once in a while, but. They're really just, this is a cheap, cheap episode. I mean, all they needed was, you know, some cement and a few tents and probably some leftover carnival stuff. It's a lame-looking carnival, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if this is, you know, is this a budget-cutting episode, or was this a, we realize now the error of our ways, and we need to take Man from Atlantis onto the land? And
I don't know, I kind of got a feeling that they saw the writing. Somebody running the show saw the writing on the wall. I mean, I can't imagine that they didn't know what the Nielsen ratings were. They must have known. I mean, they get a report.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they were getting some kind of feedback from NBC about the quality of the show. And I'm sure they thought, you know, this thing is just going to the tank. And I'm sure that somebody who was running the show was able to read the tea leaves and realize, you know what? We're doomed. Let's not tell anybody quite yet, but we're doomed. So let's just go ahead and write out a piece of crap episode to finish off the season and be done with it.
Or it could be that the ratings versus the cost per episode was not justified. But, you know, look, we can lower the cost of episodes and save you money, and then it might justify our ratings. I really don't know. I really don't know, but you do really feel like it's the end of the line. But it would be remiss of me not to bring up everybody's favorite midget, Billy Barty.
Yeah.
For playing in this. He really gives it a... I don't even know how to describe this performance, because
he's kind of irrelevant. As far as his midget status goes, I mean, it at no point does that actually come into play.
No, not really. It's entirely
irrelevant.
It's entirely irrelevant, and he's really playing it sort of like a New York mobster, kind of. You know, it's the cigar chomping, little pinstripe suit,
fedora hat.
Yeah, and he just happens to be a midget, and unfortunately, it's kind of hard to tell whether or not that's a straight midget performance or whether that's a caricature that he's playing.
I couldn't tell.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've seen him in some of his classic roles, like Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. And I think he was the little football guy in Lidsville. And, you know, he's been around.
But the weird thing is, I mean, when I first saw Billy Barty, here's his carnival, my first thought was, okay, well, the carnival is serving as some sort of a cover for his antics.
Mm-hmm.
But we never see how he uses the carnival as a cover.
Yeah.
At any time. So it as far as I'm concerned,
isn't, yeah.
No, I mean, we see how it is for the guy with the prosthetic electric arm. But we don't see it in terms of Billy Barty's character. And it made me think, well, that's kind of irrelevant then. I mean, you could have cast anybody in the part.
But they would have had to have an excuse to be in a carnival. I mean,
but Billy, if I'm not mistaken, he was actually sort of managing he was acting as manager for the guy with the electric arm.
He did seem to be acting more
and
like.
And if that's the case, then you could have cast anybody in the part.
I don't think he was supposed to be. I think that was just very poor writing. I think he was supposed to be, you know, part and parcel of the showmanship of the carnival as the midget, and he probably did some performances somewhere. But he didn't give a hoot, frankly. I mean, like when they were striking the tents, or they were putting up the tents, she came over and was yelling at him for not pitching in and helping out. And that just basically showed he didn't really care about his job at the carnival.
Well, no,
it
was simply a cover for this caper that he wanted to pull.
So that could be why he appeared to be acting as manager for the guy, because he just wasn't, you know, he's more interested in whatever he was doing than he was.
Right.
What he was supposed to be doing in the thing. But it was a sad fizzle out for the Man from Atlantis, I have to say.
I mean, as I said, when I finished watching it, I didn't feel angry. I just felt, oh, how sad. I mean, it was. I felt pity for the show. It was almost like a mercy killing at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing is I don't think at any point, I don't remember there being any sharks in Man from Atlantis.
No.
So at no point did he have the opportunity to jump the shark.
No, he didn't.
Which is weird in a show like this, but it just fizzled out. And that's why I wanted to talk about it on Fusion Patrol, is because it was kind of a show that in its first episode, in its pilot movie, it had a lot of flaws.
But there was a hint of potential.
And here the promise is like a used up tube of toothpaste that's had everything squeezed out of it.
That's a very good analogy.
And it's, you know, you're stomping on it to try to get just enough to brush your teeth out of it, and you just can't do it.
You get nothing but air.
You get nothing. There might be a little bit in there, but you just can't quite figure out how to get that last little scintilla of toothpaste out of there because of the shape of the tube and the collar and whatnot. But it's
get that one last molecule out.
It's a sad, sad ending to Man from Atlantis.
And it's not. We're not just talking about how they use Mark or how they use Billy Barty, but the entire story is filled with just useless, meaningless, dumb stuff. One part that just I just shook my head at is during the sideshow, the man with the electric arm. Oh God, what do they call him? The Incredible Electric Man, I think is the title that he has for the sake of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in and he's supposed to power up. Well, first he sticks a light bulb in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the first thought that runs through my head is, because you see, then the camera cuts to all the people in the audience. And the first thought that ran through my head was, what, none of you saw The Addams Family?
I was on a different network.
Doesn't matter. None of you have watched television. I mean, please. It was such a fake gimmick. And then the whole bit with him being able to power up all these devices in a very, very darkly lit stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the camera would cut back to the people, and you'd see them like, ooh, and ah, with this incredible excitement and glee at what this man could do. And all I could think of is, this is just purely pathetic.
Isn't there a lot of that when you go to carnivals, though? I mean, I've never seen anything impressive at a carnival, and yet whenever you see a TV show or a movie, you know, the crowds are like, whoa, at the
The last sideshow I ever attended was when I was six, and I now remember it quite well. It was about some woman who was able to transform herself into a gorilla. You remember that one?
I remember it from Diamonds Are Forever.
It was a very popular sideshow.
Heaven forbid she should get out of the cage. Just get run out of here. Go get out of the place.
Which did. And I have to admit, as a six-year-old kid who was standing near the back, with my stepsister. I mean, it just scared the crap out of me. But now I know how the stunt is done. I mean, I wasn't able to discern how the illusion was done because I was too far back, and it was dimly lit, and there were people standing in my way. So all I could do was catch little glimpses here and there. So I couldn't see how it was done. But if I were at least a teenager in that tent watching the illusion, believe me, I would have seen right through it without any hesitation, without any difficulty whatsoever. And it's the same thing with this. All I can say is maybe, just maybe, the people who wrote this thought that the yokels who are going to be watching this episode had lower IQs than those who were than those of the characters who were in the tent watching The Amazing Electrical Man.
Oh, aren't you the Mr. Sophisticated? I just see right through it. Oh, yes.
And your point being?
Well, let's turn aside from the yokels in the audience for a second. And there, I do have a couple things that I thought were kind of noteworthy here towards the end of the episode. The whole premise of this was that this King Onik Nakatnuten treasures with a solid golden death mask and stuff. It was built on a museum that's over the storm drains in Los Angeles. And the only way to get into it is to swim through the storm drains and stay under the water. So apparently the storm drain is not completely full, but that it's full enough you can swim through it. But if he came up for air, he'd be seen by the CCT cameras that they'd placed in the storm drains.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm thinking that if you went to the trouble of putting CCTV cameras in the storm drains leading underneath your exhibit, that you would probably say lock and alarm the access panel from the storm drain into the museum. But apparently they didn't do that.
No.
So that would be one. But there you go.
But if you did that, then you wouldn't have a show.
Exactly. And then there was the scene at the end where he fights with the bad guy. The alarms are going off, and the electric guy, instead of escaping, decides he's going to kill Mark for revenge. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, shouldn't you like be getting your rear end out of this place as fast as you possibly can? The time for fighting is long past, but you know he's had it in for Mark the entire episode. So that's one. And then when they do get into the pool, which there's like a fountain, and Mark gets into the fountain, and then the electric guy comes out into the fountain. You see where this is going, right? Electric guy in the fountain. It's not really a good idea. They're fighting each other, and the electric guy lands a good solid electric punch on Mark's butt.
Yep.
And you know why that is? Because they had to, the only place on him that they could conceal the pyrotechnic device. But it's a funny, you know, it's a funny fight thing where you get the guy on his butt in a TV show. But that's pretty much all they could do in the thing. Oh, and at the end of the episode, Mark goes to do the kiss on the girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, he swoops in on her, which I think was, showing the growth of Mark's character. And she makes a comment about not getting to see his act underwater. It's like...
The innuendos are just all over the place.
They were, for an American 70s kid show, that was pretty...
Well, again, not a kid show. It was a family show, but the point is still there. I mean, that was very suggestive.
Yes, indeed it was.
Got right past the censors.
And Mark still didn't get any.
No, he didn't.
No, not a bit. I think CW got some cotton candy at the end, but that's basically it.
Oh, Mark got his first Ferris wheel ride.
Oh, yeah, he did get a Ferris wheel ride.
That was the fastest looking Ferris wheel I've ever seen in my life.
It was cranking around there pretty good, wasn't it?
Really.
Those small ones do that sometimes, though, which is why I don't go on the small ones. And then the really slow ones are the gigantic ones, which are, you know, really high, which is why I don't go on the... No. That's not true. I've been on the London Eye. I've looked down on the MI5 building.
Well, that one's different. Yeah. You kind of have to ride that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't climb
it. And it's not a thrill ride either. It's an observation ride.
They don't like Ferris wheel. They like the term observation wheel. Yeah. I don't know why they don't like the word Ferris wheel, but it's apparently fallen out of favor. Mm. Maybe because they're not made out of iron anymore. I don't know. Well, have we got anything else in this episode? Anything else? And or on The Man from Atlantis as a series? Because this truly is our Man from Atlantis wrap-up into our second 100 episodes of Fusion Patrol. Man from Atlantis will not be seen again.
No. And we're not going to go. I mean, she sunk like the Titanic. I mean, this was a really dreadful, dreadfully bad series.
All right. Well, next time we're going to be starting the first of three parts of episodes 97, 98, and 99. It's going to be our run up to episode 100, where we're going to do something we have never done before on Fusion Patrol. You'll have to tune in and find out next time on our continuing countdown to our 100th podcast. Good night. Join us again next time.
You've been listening to the Fusion Patrol podcast, a production of Lone Locust Productions. Join us on our new discussion forums at FusionPatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, username Fusion Patrol. You can also send us feedback by email at feedback@FusionPatrol.com. If you'd like to support Fusion Patrol, please leave us a review on iTunes. Fusion Patrol's theme music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.
Are you going to say something?
Well, I was waiting for the On Fusion Patrol.
On Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Yeah, that one's going to sound like a weird one.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.